Hello, listeners. This is Jenny Brentis. I'm here with Connor Orr. This is our first official podcast together in the new feed, Connor. We are going to try a name out on our listeners. They may not like it, but we'll see. We're soliciting listener feedback. The MMQB Weak Side Podcast. I think it fits our personalities.
It's just, it's our brand. And hopefully along the way, it will develop into your brand too. Maybe we can find a little sweet spot in our pocket of weekly podcasts, our lineup.
The MMQB's Mitch Golditch, who controls the social channels, may unleash a social campaign for Jenny or not. We all know I love a good or pun,
yeah.
But we just felt like the weak side was more on brand for what we're trying to achieve here.
Yeah, no, I think that there were plenty of pun opportunities. I mean, my last name is obviously a conjunction, right?
Conjunction.
Or, yeah. I think we need to move past that. It's been 30 years of or jokes, and I think it's good to brand something beyond.
Oh, we'll still have or jokes, just maybe not in the show headline. So Connor and I have been working together since October 2010, maybe September 2010, when we were both on the Jets beat for the Star Ledger in New Jersey. And now we get to talk about football together for 45 minutes every Tuesday in your feeds on Wednesday.
Could you have imagined when you were first stuck with a knowledgeless intern or that this would be what it would have turned into?
I wouldn't choose the verb stuck. I would say gifted Connor Orr to work with. It was a good run. So we'll probably mix in a lot of 2010, 2011 Jets jokes.
Yeah. Right up until Tebow, right?
Through Tebow training camp.
Tebow training. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Wow. Honestly, it's a miracle we're still here, I think.
I think that's the takeaway.
Yeah. Just be the Survivors podcast.
That's another option. We'll ask our listeners what they prefer. So it was a busy week one. We'll just dive into the first news topic.
The NFL head of officiating Al Riveron told Pool Reporters on Monday night that, yes, officials did make a mistake in a Saints game, believe it or not. There was a 10-second runoff at the end of the game, which ultimately cost the Saints 15 seconds during their thrilling Monday night win over the Texans. But I don't want to just talk about this. I wanted to use it as an entry point to talk about the first week of officiating as a whole. It's always interesting because there's emphasis calls that sort of disappear towards the end of the season. There are major calls too because officials are still kind of working the kinks out. There's new offenses, kind of whatever you want to call what Kyler Murray's doing in Arizona. And we heard about the hand clap, I think, on at least four different broadcasts that were talked about that I saw on Sunday.
Wow.
So I don't know. What do you make of the first week in officiating? And what do you think are there any sort of big storylines that you kind of caught your attention this weekend?
Well, last year was lowering the helmet in the preseason, but then body weight in the regular season. We haven't had anything like that this year. Obviously, the Saints call at the end of the half, that was under scrutiny, the mix-up with the officials there. That is a tough job to go into the game. Before the game, on the broadcast, they had John Perry, who's now in the ESPN booth as the officiating analyst, talking about the pressure that was put on the Super Bowl crew last year after the NFC Championship game, no call. And I would say that probably the opener in New Orleans was only slightly less intense for the officials than the Super Bowl, right? Because you have all of these fans wearing these ref costumes and ready to dish out expletives. And you have people visiting the site of the no call. It was a lot, right?
Can I say sneaky that John Perry is great? I really like him
yes,
as a rules analyst.
I agree.
Sort of a no frills kind of thing, which I think just hits me in the right way during a game like that. Like he gets in, great perspective, and then just gets out. I think that's exactly what you need from a guy like that.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But I will say that while it was not overcalled like body weight, I think my prediction for sort of the sneaky early season rule that is going to come up and become a bigger issue might be that blindside blocking rule. We saw that, I think it was shortly before Greg Robinson was kicked out of the game in Cleveland, where there was sort of that swing pass to Odell Beckham over on the left side. This was their first drive when they scored the touchdown. And, you know, obviously Greg Robinson is going out to block that cornerback that's on him, and then Odell is going to cut inside. I mean, a play that would seem like, if you have receivers like that, to be a large tenant tentpole play of your offense to just get your best playmakers the ball. But if that's being overcalled in the early parts of the season, I think there's a lot of teams that run a lot of that stuff that might be concerned about that a little bit too.
That's a good pickup there, or
I don't know.
That's a good example.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, especially if you're a team that has Odell or someone like Juju Smith-Schuster or right. like a really agile receiver that you want to free up but is going to get grabbed or tossed around at the line. I don't know. I mean, I think that could be like an interesting thing where we see it called a bunch in the early times. I don't think I saw it again in that game, but one of those things that maybe we should keep an eye on.
All right, move to the next topic. Whether they like it or not, the Dolphins may not be able to hide from the notion that they have put their roster in a disadvantageous position in order to improve future prospects anymore.
That's the nicest way to say tanking that I could possibly
Okay, okay, okay. That was a mouthful. In lieu of tanking.
Shorten your sentences, Orr.
Amid rumors that more players want out, what is the right thing for Brian Flores to do in Miami? That is a tough situation there because they had a trade on the eve of the season, which, mm-hmm. as we saw in Oakland last year, never goes over well. And they have a very, probably more extreme than other teams, I think, dismantling at this point, right?
Yeah.
So the biggest question, I think, if you're a veteran player, yes, careers are short and you don't want to be stuck in a bad situation where you have no hopes of winning. But I think a bigger thing too is player safety.
Yeah.
Do you feel like your roster is good enough to not be so overmatched that it's dangerous?
Yeah.
And I could understand where if you feel like the roster has been torn down so much that you are in that position where you don't feel safe out there.
That's a great point.
I don't know where that threshold is.
I mean, to me, right, the conversation at least starts when you lose 59-10 to the Baltimore Ravens, right?
Right.
I think if they had hung around and there was sort of a pluckiness to this team, I don't think it would have been as dramatic. But I don't know about you, but that was just eye-opening to me. And of course, Lamar Jackson played great, and that is sort of an interesting... They're doing some interesting things with that offense, but the first thing that hit me egregiously is, wow, this looks... you put it perfectly, like almost unsafe. Like this may not be good for the long term.
Yeah, yeah. And you just wonder, you don't have a long... This is always the question with tanking. Will you be there to see it through on the other side? And I think it's hard for a coach with Brian Flores, who has a lot of ideas that he wants to install, or any coach, but
yeah.
you know, he's focused on culture and rebuilding the locker room. But you sort of lose this year because you figure that a lot of the players that who would be locker room cornerstones aren't necessarily going to be here, or a lot of players who would teach other players how to work or how to, you know, have good fundamentals, they're not here. So you sort of lose all of the teaching elements that are necessary to sort of lay the foundation. And I think that's hard for a head coach because then you set yourself a year back in a profession where you don't often have years to give.
Yeah. And you can think about that across the board. I mean, he brought a lot of Patriots staffers with them too. And I wonder if in a lot of ways that they, not that it's this thing where they keep thinking they can overcome the circumstances because of the way that they've done things, but do you think that it's one of those situations where you can almost trick yourself into believing that we've coached these guys at such an expert level in other places that regardless of the talent level, I don't know, is there sort of like a false thing in your own memory where you think that you can build someone up better than what you really can? I don't know. Did the Patriots give you a false sense of what actual talent is?
Right, right. No, and that's a good question because the Patriots have, part of their success has been having players who don't play well elsewhere thrive in their system for whatever reason that might be. But it's clear because so many of those assistants went with Flores, it's clear that he is a good leader and the kind of guy that people can believe in and mm-hmm. the kind of person that can command a room. So the early report that came out this weekend of that being true is somewhat disheartening. But I think when you're a coach, you really just have to just keep going through it. And once you start the teardown, you kind of cross the Rubicon at a certain point and you just have to keep going and essentially just flush out the locker room to get all of those bad feelings out.
I think this is a good segue into one of our next topics, but that I think that it's hard when you're someone like Brian Flores, and I only know him. I mean, I know you did kind of a great deep dive on him before he went to Miami, but to me, it seems like the kind of person that it's going to be harder for him to weather this situation, because you're not someone like Gruden, where Gruden creates his own fires, but then somehow is able to twist that around that it's someone else's fault and that it's us against the world. Whereas I don't know that Brian is doing that, where, you know, they're certainly creating their own fires, but I think that they're not making the team believe that it's, I mean, it's hard to make the team believe that it's someone else's fault, right?
Right. The one thing they have on their side is that the owner wanted this.
Yeah.
The reason they split with Adam Gase is they had different visions for the direction of the team. Adam Gase wanted to sort of continue the, we don't need to tear it down to nothing. We can keep sort of rebuilding while we're still decent, right? And Ross wanted a different direction. So they have that on their side. So that's one positive.
The MMQB NFL podcast is brought to you by DraftKings. Week one is in the books, but DraftKings isn't finished celebrating with some huge fantasy football contests. For week two of the football season, DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is giving new users a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit when you put in code MMQB during signup. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch mean more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Plus, all new and existing users get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with this football season. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at over $1.5 million in prizes. Download the DraftKings app now and use code MMQB. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. New users, don't forget to enter our code MMQB to get a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit. That's code MMQB only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. We're also brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So speaking of the Raiders, Jenny, they're 1-0. Last Monday night football game at a baseball stadium. Just a very Gruden atmosphere yesterday. I mean, this was vintage Oakland in a lot of ways. I mean, he had a rookie running back that he ran 25 times like he promised. It does remind me a little bit of, I don't know if you remember, I think they opened the season on Monday Night Football last year, too, or maybe it was Thursday Night Football. That first drive against the Rams, they marched right down the field and they scored a touchdown, and they looked like a house on fire. Mm-hmm. They were able to sustain that a little more. Their opponent was not as good, but I don't know. What do you make of this? I mean, is this, I think I wrote it down in our notes, this schedule coming up is a gauntlet. They have the Chiefs, the Vikings, the Colts, the Bears, the Packers, and the Texans.
Wow.
All of them, except for the Chiefs, are road games, and one of them against the Bears is in another country.
Yeah.
Do they come out of this still making us believe that this is a good team, that this is a playoff team?
Yeah, and they were ticked off about the schedule because there are 6 weeks in a row that they're away from Oakland. Mm-hmm. When they get that schedule and then they get told they're on Hard Knocks, it was an unpleasant reaction from Oakland toward the league office at that point in time. You know, they have adopted this us against the world mentality. AB situation certainly fed into it, and I think that emotion sustained them night one. I'm not convinced that this is a team that is going to win more than 6 games. I think the roster is young. I think it's somewhat thin. I think there's definite holes. But I will say, as we referenced before, it was an impressive start, and it was definitely a way to make people stop talking about them a little bit, to stop speculating. And Brown's in New England, and they're saying we're doing our own thing. I'm just not sold yet. I haven't seen it yet.
It is a powerful thing when players do believe that outside forces are.
Like right up your alley. Outside forces conspiring to make your current situation inflamed.
But we saw the Patriots last year manufactured this idea out of nothing.
That's true.
And went to the Super Bowl.
That's true.
This is actually happening to the Raiders, right? I mean, they were banged by the scheduling, group. I mean, 6 weeks away from home and an international game. If you were a more established, and I'm not saying that Gruden is not established, but contemporarily established head coach, you would have a very, because he was away. But I think if you were Bill Belichick and they did that to you, or if you were, I'm thinking of, Tom Coughlin at the end of his Giants career, or someone that had a lot of cachet with the league, you would have a legitimate gripe and probably get something for it on the back end, right?
Right.
I don't know what that would be. Maybe a friendlier schedule next year, or you don't have to do Hard Knocks for another 2 decades or something like that. But to me, it does seem like there are legitimate forces that are sort of outside their control, and whether or not they realize that John Gruden is starting some of these fires or not, it at least worked for them for one day.
It worked for them for one day. The question is, can you sustain it? Week one is always fool's gold every year. We don't know what to believe.
I would say I've been doing this for 10 years now, and I've sustained myself on minor slights for 10 years. So
wow. So the length of Gruden's contract.
Yeah. So it's possible. I guess, it could happen is all I'm saying. It would just be a weird parallel universe to see the Raiders sitting at 3-1, or 4-1 after the London game. I would just be very surprised. But at the same time, I don't know what to believe anymore.
I don't know either. I mean, Carr played well. They have some talented players on defense.
Tyrell Williams is looking every bit the number one wide receiver.
Trent Brown was a great signing. So
I don't know.
The world's upside down.
And it has been for a while,
Yeah. Yeah.
You just wonder when it's going to turn upside up again. here's another familiar grounds for us, both as former Giants beat writers as well. And I'll kind of ad lib this topic and then we'll get into something connected to that. But Saquon Barkley, through the third quarter, was averaging almost 15 yards a carry against the Cowboys, but had fewer than 10 touches. This was just an offense that seemed to forget the fact that he was there while they were getting blown out by the Cowboys. And while teams like, you watch Frank Reich stick with the run against the Colts when they were down the same and they were managed to come back and tie that game and take them to overtime, the Giants just kind of put all of their hopes and dreams into Eli Manning again. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know what this team is doing. Then they put Daniel Jones in again, and they, there's another fight that ensues from that because it's the optics of the whole situation. I don't know. What is going on there, do you think, and what can we expect from the Giants moving forward?
I agree. The Barkley use was baffling. You mentioned the Colts, and that's a great example. Based off of the stats that Anthony Lynn quoted in his post-game meeting with the team that the team posted on their social channels, the Colts were averaging 2.6 something yards per carry, under 3 in the first half, and then they averaged over 6 in the second half. So they got a big payoff. But the Giants didn't even have to wait for the big payoff. Barkley was averaging that in the first half. So it was very hard to understand. This team has issues on defense. They're very young on defense. They're going to have a lot of hard times stopping other teams. But Barkley, you've made him the centerpiece of your offense, and then all of a sudden you pull back. So it's just, it makes you wonder what the plan is here.
He is the guy, and rightfully so. I will give Dave Gettleman that, that he is a generational talent at running back.
Right.
I don't think there's any doubt about that, and I feel better about saying, and you know, he made this move at the time when it was very unpopular to take him over someone like Sam Darnold. I think that he is not proving himself right, but I do think that if you look at the value that you're getting from both players, I do think it may be evening out slightly. Depends on, I guess, what happens with Sam Darnold in the future, but... Why wouldn't you run him 25 times a game? I mean, that's your offense. You got all these guys, older veteran offensive linemen. The whole point was to do this, right?
That was the whole point.
Yeah, I don't understand, you know? And Eli Manning, I think, is good enough to play that Dak Prescott role if he needed to, but they're asking him to do far too much. And we saw him at the end of this game scrambling. Like, at what point do we need him leaving the pocket for anything?
Right. That's what was so confusing. I mean, you are playing across from a team that has made the running back the centerpiece of their offense.
just run some of their plays.
And Barkley is more talented than
yes.
Elliott. And I'm not just saying that because Barkley is a Penn Stater and Elliott is Ohio Stater. Because Albert Breer is not in the room, and this is not a fight that we need to
you
fight.
You can't control us anymore, Albert. I'm going to start talking about Syracuse players, too.
Yeah, it was baffling usage, which I think, you know, is a segue into our next small segment. So I think, you know, after the news topics this season, we'll just end with a couple little segments.
Just fun stuff. Yeah.
And the first one is really a favorite. There's a lot of pressure on the Oracle because you seem to always be right. But what if you do 17 weeks of being the Oracle and people start calculating your batting percentage?
That would be terrifying.
Terrifying.
The trick is to predict stuff that's so far down the road that this podcast will just be a distant memory of everybody.
Good. I like it.
So my prediction now sort of dovetails off that. I was thinking a lot about Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley this weekend. And Ezekiel Elliott did a good job of capitalizing on the fact that his team centered around him at a point in his career where you can argue about the guaranteed money or what he ended up getting or not getting, but as a running back, he got that security. He didn't go through the pipeline, get used up until the fifth-year option, and then cut loose, right? And if you're Saquon Barkley, I wonder, and this is my Oracle prediction, there's either going to be a new contract or a holdout before the start of next season. This is only after 2 years on his rookie deal.
Bold. I like it.
I would do that, though, right? I mean, they're not going to be anything without you, and even more so next year when you're starting a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, they make use of the leverage. A rare player like that who can be the centerpiece of an offense,
yeah,
but currently is not for unknown reasons. But yes, that's it. I like it, Orr.
And Christian McCaffrey is a year ahead. I mean, so he's maybe a little behind on this, but as Cam Newton's situation continues to be nebulous, I mean, that's another guy where I think you capitalize on this now when the precedent has been set by Ezekiel Elliott and say, no, you know, I mean, he's touching the ball almost 40 times a game between his catches and his runs. I mean, you got to get paid first, I think, you know?
Yeah.
Take care of that first. Put that in the bank account.
Yeah. Well, I don't have anything to say because I agree with you, Connor.
What if it is going to be scary, though, if like week 17 comes around and I'm like so wrong about all this stuff?
I shouldn't have even put that out there. You're always right.
I am welcoming the challenge to be tracked, though.
Who am I? I just invited people to track your success. Like, where did that come from? If I were you, I'd be like, get out of here.
No, I'm in. I say we do it. So here's another fun segment that we're going to do. Something that, you know, I don't think the sports talking industry a lot, it's a lot of built on combativeness, but I think that having a Vrentis consensus in this world just fits in with our brand. It's a little bit less of a, you know, we're not screaming at each other. This is something that we both agree on, and we want to end the podcast with something that we both agree on.
We're building bridges, Connor.
We're building bridges. Yeah, that's what I want to do.
I think we both can agree that the Browns are not Super Bowl contenders.
Yes.
I don't think they're terrible. I don't think they're as bad as they are week one, but I do not think they're Super Bowl contenders. And this is where I think it's challenging to let these runaway predictions in the offseason. But the one thing that you and I have both said all offseason is what about the offensive line?
Yep.
And that really played out week one, because that trade of Kevin Zeitler to the Giants in exchange for Olivier Vernon, I think, will haunt the team.
Yes, I totally agree.
Because that you give away such a core piece of your offensive line, and you have all of these exciting players, you know, Baker, Jarvis Landry, Odell, but it starts with the line, and maybe they'll get it fixed, but you definitely saw some struggles with that week one.
You know how it manifested itself too? It was really interesting where Baker had such a good run at the end of last year, and I hate to point this out, but against sort of suboptimal teams, like if you looked at the end of their schedule post Hugh Jackson, it was like two Bengals teams, it was like a bad Cardinals team, they didn't beat a lot of talented teams at the end of that, and there was that natural lift that you get from getting rid of Hugh Jackson, you know, I think, and kind of cleaning up the situation there, but he played well, and then that floats into the preseason where there's not a ton of pressure on you, and then you looked at that Titans game. How many times did he float backwards in the pocket and invite more pressure instead of just doing that two or three steps and getting rid of the ball, which he's talented enough to do, but I feel like he almost got tricked into thinking that he had more time or more latitude to make these plays.
Yeah, that's a great point. There's a lot. It's hard to make a consensus off of week one, but I do think there were a lot of things in that game that just you could see being issues this season.
Yeah, I was a lot. Where did you pick them in our preseason predictions? You have them making the playoffs or no?
No playoffs.
I had them as the sixth seed. I had the Steelers winning the division, which I mean, again, I don't feel great about now, but it might happen in the future. But I just always saw them as a sixth seed at best, mm-hmm. Right? I don't know.
Yeah,
it's easy for me to say that now. It's like the one thing I got right this offseason. But you know,
my picks were didn't look so great after week one either, Connor. So we'll see where things end up. We also should invite our listeners to share in their favorite parent hot takes on our parent hot take line.
Yes.
We will be soliciting from Jim Brentis and Jeff Orr.
Yes.
In future weeks. This was not a great week because Penn State played Buffalo.
Notre Dame had the week off.
Jim didn't watch Sunday Night Football because he had rare dinner plans.
That's great, though.
Great for him. Really enjoyed the short rib. So, you know, we'd like to give him a shout out moving forward, but we really know that parents have the best hot takes when it comes to sports.
Parents have. And it's so far and away, and maybe it's different for us because this is what we have to obsess over. So to hear something from the outside, it hits us in a different way. But I feel like when I see on Twitter people posting texts from their parents during football games, I always liked that. I don't know why. I always like the ones that I get during games. So on Twitter, at Jenny Vrentis, at Connor Orr, find us with your best parent hot takes. I think that'll be great. And another reminder, you know, we have this great new lineup here at the MMQB where we're going to deliver fresh personalities, fresh content every single day of the week in your podcast feed. So subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast and the MMQB news feed, which is a new feed where, you know, just it's going to take 5 minutes in the afternoon. It's going to be perfect. It's going to hit your playlist when you're driving home from work at the end of the day. It's a 5-minute news podcast that hits just in time for your afternoon commutes. So you're never going to be away from the headlines. You're going to be fully caught up. And in only 5 minutes, you don't have to search for anything on TV. You don't have to go read anything online. We just deliver that to you, part of your morning commute. I don't know. I think this new lineup is just going to be a banger, Jenny. I think we got talent across the board.
I'm really excited. Off to a good start. We're 1-0, Connor.
Yeah.
I'm just going to proclaim us 1-0.
Feels good. That's it. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's winning week one, winning the day, every rock, every day. And yeah, so thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.